This is a News Laundry podcast, and you're listening to the Awful and Awesome Entertainment Wrap.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Awful and Awesome Entertainment Wrap, episode 343. I'm Abbas.
And I'm Nenika.
And when the guards are away, the inmates will play.
I will apologize, though. I'm really under the weather today. I was coughing my lungs out before this, so I do sound a little weird. But but let's get into this.
You know what I've been under? I've been under the spell
The Ambani under the wedding. I was literally going to start the episode. You know, a specter has been haunting the nation. The specter of the third Ambani kid wedding. So yeah, Abbas. No. Let's start with this. Abbas, if you had infinite money and you were getting married, how would you do it?
Oh, I was only getting married. I think I would do it exactly the way I think the Ambanis have done it. I think I wouldn't do, I wouldn't change a thing. But I would just like to mention at the top of the episode, that's not the only thing we're going to talk about this episode. There are other things also.
We're a serious podcast and we talk about serious things. But we thought, you know, just let us just give our critical inputs on this spectacle that has been unfolding, which is why we're talking about it. Otherwise, we always talk about erudite, refined, culturally noteworthy things only. Isn't that
all,
right, Abbas?
Things which are the exact opposite of the Ambani wedding. But anyway, so we'll come back to the Ambani wedding. A couple of other things that we'll be talking about on the episode is Lapata Ladies, which is the new Kiran Rao film that is playing in theaters right now. I happen to catch it, so I'll be talking about that. We'll also be talking about Mr. and Mrs. Smith, the new action drama, comedy, romance,
everything sort of rolled into one.
Oh, okay. Which is on Amazon Prime Video. We'll also be talking about The Holdovers, which is another movie that has a lot of Oscar buzz going on, which Nanika was able to watch. Before we get on with the show, here's what happened in the world of entertainment. Dune Part 2 has had the biggest domestic opening weekend of the year so far in North America with a collection of $81.5 million. The film has grossed $178 million worldwide.
Janice Burgess, the creator of Nickelodeon show The Backyardigans, passed away on 4th March. She was 72 years old.
Controversial political film Article 370 has grossed over 50 crores in the span of 10 days of its theatrical release. Earlier, PM Modi endorsed the film at a rally in Jammu.
Vikas Behel, the director of 2014 super hit Queen, has confirmed a sequel, stating his team has finalized the story. Kangana Ranaut is set to reprise her role and Vikas Behel shall be returning to helm the project.
Let's go!
Culturally and socially, we've moved too far on ahead to like welcome the sequel of Queen. Like back when it happened, Kangana Ranaut was like sort of this contrarian voice and Vikas Behel was like an upcoming director from Phantom Film Collectives or whatever. Ever since that has happened, Kangana Ranaut has turned into what she has and Vikas Behel has had one really serious Me Too allegation against him. So I'm not sure what is in store for the next Queen or if it'll be able to capture the charm of the last time, but fingers crossed, I guess.
I think it'll be called Controversial Queen. Queen of Controversy.
Queen of Controversy, who knows? But it's really crazy. But back when Queen did come out, you know, the slice of pop culture bandwidth that captured was crazy. It was a very good film for the time that
Everyone,
it came out
in. My mom and my sister saw it.
Yeah, it was wonderful at that time.
I still haven't seen it.
I was like very beautiful feminist without being preachy, very zany, very cute film. But I feel like, we're not getting that one back. Like, let's not even hope or expect anything of that sort.
Or they may surprise you. You never know.
Or they may, I'd happily be surprised if that was the case. But let's see.
All right, then let's get on with the show. Without further ado, let's get to the big thing that happened this week, Nenika, which was Anant Ambani and Radhiki, as Rihanna
called it. You know, I was surprised to find out this isn't actually their wedding.
They didn't get married. I said they got married.
It's not actually their wedding. I was so surprised to find out these are just their pre-wedding festivities. And the wedding is supposed to take place sometime in June. I was just like, if they're spending this much on pre-wedding festivities, I wonder what's going to happen at the wedding. Like if Rihanna was performing at the pre-wedding festivities and who Beyonce already, you know, performed at Isha Ambani's wedding.
I think they're going to aim for Taylor Swift.
Yeah, even I'm thinking they're going either for Taylor Swift or they're getting BTS here and all the, you know, they're probably the biggest act. I have no clue. I don't follow them. If they have disbanded, my condolences to the followers, but I guess. Okay, Ambani, Abbas. It's very important for me to ask. If you were to get married, which musical act are you calling to your wedding? I know it's Metallica. I'm guessing it's Metallica.
See, if it was, I mean, if it was a birthday bash, then it would all be my rules, right? If for a wedding, I also have to take into consideration the bride's side of the family I'm not assuming that they will be huge Metallica fans. But I'll play it safe. I'll probably get Coldplay down here.
Yeah, fair. Anyway, everyone's been going to Coldplay's concerts. And they seem okay coming in, you know, singing a gig here at this part of the world. So I guess, sure. And anyway, do you remember in 2015, this one time, Chris Martin randomly showed up to this bar in
Delhi, in Hoskars,
which was Summer House Cafe, and he apparently performed and just left. So I'm like, I guess he's okay with performing in like low down venues in India. So, maybe
they also did that whole video, with Holi playing Holi.
Sonam Kapoor was in it. Guys, it was him for the weekend, I guess.
Who was also at the Ambani pre-wedding bash, traveling in a bus.
Yes, what did you think about the fact that they made all the Bombay celebs travel via bus?
Oh, I loved it. See, so there are two schools of thought, right, about this. I don't know if you can call it schools of thought. One is that, are Ambani ne aukaat dikha di in logo ko, itne ameer bade bante hain, inko bus mein bitha diya. One is that. And the other is, what is this vulgar display of wealth in a country that is where most of the people live below the poverty line? So we'll come to the second part of it, which is the slightly more serious take on it. But I loved it. I loved that Ananya Pandey was very uncomfortable sitting in a bus, trying to sit in a bus. I don't know how many of these people traveled in a bus last time. And I loved how David Dhawan and his son Varun Dhawan, I think they were catching people's bags, and I think some Instagram page was, oh my God, they're so humble. They're helping people out in a bus. I'm like, yeah, okay, fine.
I think you've really followed the celeb buzz around it. I guess you were one of those, who's the paparazzi guy? Viral Bhayani, viral? I do not know. Is his name actual viral? Like, is that, that's like some stunning nominative determinism on display. He popped out of his mother's womb and his parents are like, our child will become an internet celeb. So we must name him accordingly. Well, that's crazy. I feel like you've been following all these paparazzi meme pages.
Not all of them. So also a lot of this is not by choice. It's just it was all over social media so much. But I saw this one video where this lady sort of did a breakdown of which celebrities were sent in a bus and which were actually picked up in a car.
Ooh.
And that was very interesting. So the three Khans were picked up. Very important.
If you remember these two camps, who were you surprised to see was sent by bus, and who were you surprised to see that had a car sent for them?
So I wasn't surprised by any of the car people because I think they all deserve.
Wait, who was in the cars?
So the cars was the three Khans.
Okay.
Ranveer and Deepika, Bill Gates, Mark Zuckerberg, Mahindra Singh Dhoni. Oh. All these people.
Dhoni was also at the wedding. That's crazy.
Yeah, I'll actually tell you who I was surprised was sent by bus, which was Kareena Saif and their child. Traveled by bus.
Oh my God. Kareena and Saif, I don't care for. But given the fact that their son is like a paparazzi celebrity, like a paparazzi favorite, it's kind of sad sending him on a bus, I guess.
Yeah. But yeah, they were in a bus. And then Ananya Pandey and Aditya Roy Kapoor, who they are seeing each other, apparently they were in a bus. Navya Naveli Nanda, Amitabh's granddaughter, was on a bus and apparently was seen, like when she was told she has to go on a bus, she was seen meddling with her phone. So the conspiracy theory is she was trying to get out of the bus and get a car
for herself. Everyone would do the same.
Yeah, so these were the couple of celebrities who were sent by bus.
No, it's and, what's actually crazy to me is that they organize all these festivities in the middle of nowhere in Jamnagar.
We should also mention the Jamnagar airport overnight was turned into an international airport.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Okay, so I was briefly employed by Reliance and I did work at the Jamnagar refinery. Back when I was there, which was 2018, there was no airport because the closest airport I could go to was, I guess, Ahmedabad or Rajkot, whatever. And then I had to take a bus and it's like an arduous journey. And the refinery township is in the middle of nowhere. Like it's probably, I don't know, 1 hour or so removed from the actual Jamnagar city, which by the way is like a tier three city at best. So it was just so insane seeing all these celebs like taking like casual glamour shots on the roads where I was doing my existential post-work walks. So it is kind of insane. Like there was some, like somebody was going gaga over some pictures that Janhvi Kapoor had taken. And I could tell that the road behind it was one of the ones that I would like walk on or whatever on my way to work. And I was just like, this cannot be the same roads where I was walking around in overalls, you know, cursing the heat or whatever, or my work schedule or whatever. Like, these cannot be the same roads. But yeah, it's crazy that they had all these festivities in Jamnagar of all places, in the middle of nowhere in Jamnagar of all places. But yeah.
The big international act, of course, was Rihanna, who I did not know this, so she hasn't performed live in a long time. I think her last live performance
at the
was
Super Bowl, where she also announced her second pregnancy, essentially. And then she just sort of wasn't seen after that for a while. So it's crazy. Yes. And then later it turns out that, you know, A, she charged 9 million for the performance, and B,
which is how much in Indian rupees, roughly
80 crores.
Oh wow, okay.
Yeah, so she performed for about $9 million. And secondly, and more importantly, Fenty Beauty is coming to India, and I think it will be launched on the Sephora, Tira, whatever platform that they're like Ambani's own.
Isn't the launch supposed to be on Nykaa, and that was the big thing?
Yeah, I think she's launching it on Nykaa or something, but essentially she came to India, but and it was entirely
Nykaa
on business purpose.
Tira, right? Aren't they competitors? And
that is true, they're competitors. The Tira thing has entered the market.
She,
now
she did both the things. She performed for the Ambanis, and now she's launching her thing on a rival
I think it's on Nykaa, but let's see. I mean, essentially she came here for business, and that is what she managed to do, so good for her.
But tell me, what all videos have you seen? So I've seen a lot of videos of the Diljit Dosanjh performance and the Rihanna performance, which happened. I also saw
the three Khans were made to Natu Natu or something.
Natu Natu, yeah. They didn't even dance on the Telugu version. They danced on the Hindi version, which is Nacho Nacho.
Achha.
Which is really weird. But tell me something. So, of course, everybody's been saying this, they're sellouts. They went for this, all of them, these prestigious people. Some of them are like Bharat Ratna winners and so on and so forth. And it's kind of beneath their caliber to see them dancing at a wedding, right? But my question is, see, if you get that invite in your mail that India's richest man has invited you to his son's pre-wedding bash, how do you say no to that? Because I'm sure there are repercussions to say no to that, right? That like the stakes are pretty high if you piss them off.
I mean, is saying no to a wedding invitation like pissing them off? Is just not showing up to a wedding.
If you're the richest person in the world and control pretty much everything, from your SIM card,
I guess,
to,
you know, also it's just like, I think it's a, so I visited Bombay for the first time in I don't know how many years, and I was surprised.
And you did not meet me, but we'll ignore that.
I'm so sorry. It was my last minute trip, and it was an entirely work thing, but I was walking around and I was just like, Bombay just has the vibe of a small town because everything is just so enmeshed and close together. So I feel like there's no way you can escape the person whose invitation you're saying no to. There's hardly any space, so you're going to run into them eventually.
Okay, fair
enough. So I guess
enough,
maybe that's
so,
the reason, but I don't know. I mean, I guess, I don't know if there are repercussions in terms of like, I'm sure Reliance produces a bunch of their movies and they own all these entertainment platforms,
right,
and whatnot.
But, like, so the actors I get, like, I'm sure Shah Rukh Khan is used to dancing at weddings and, you know,
he makes good money off of it as well.
Exactly, great money. But someone like a Sachin Tendulkar, or I think some, I also spotted a few like classical musicians and so on and so forth. So someone like that, you know, who's dedicated more to the nation, and now they are like just another guest at the Ambani wedding. Do you think, like, basically, does it give the idea that, hey, if you have enough money, you can control anyone?
I feel like it definitely gave off, like, the buzz essentially was that, you know, you're getting all these actors, you're getting them here, making them ride in buses, coming and making them perform. So it's definitely that, you know, there's a little bit of like gentle social coercion happening here, where in the sense that you do fear social exclusion if you don't show up to the wedding. So that is by default there. But I guess that's just the kind of access and power money buys you. And Ambanis are clearly enjoying their day in the sun. So all of that is happening. So I guess, you know, not surprised by that. I don't think that there's any larger conspiracy at play. They also extended the invites to, I guess, your Bill Gates and Mark Zuckerberg. And I feel like case, I guess they just realize it's a decent move to come and shake hands with like India's biggest businessman, as opposed to, I don't think there was any coercion involved there. They just realize India's an upcoming market, so might as well show up, shake hands with the big boss and sort of solidify their position where they can and take a tour of the facilities, I guess. So I guess there's no coercion involved, but it's definitely like you can see the kind of access and power the Ambanis have. Like, this is a very naked and easy display of
yes,
what they are in position of right now.
Yeah, fair enough. I think Yeah, that actually what I was coming to, that do you think it was tone deaf to sort of do a celebration like this, given that, okay, you're the richest person in the country, but then I think, I mean, that comes down to even the fact that even the Antilla House in Bombay, you won't find, like, I mean, you'll find a slum pretty much down the road from where the Antilla stands. So I guess the dichotomy you can't escape in India. I personally am not a fan of people who have this innate sense of showing off their wealth. So I don't know, but I can't deny that I love the memes also that were coming out.
So the funniest, yeah. There's always been this thing, like, you know, even when, okay, wow, I feel weird saying this, but even when France was on the brink of the revolution, the French Revolution, about, you know, the income inequality, the wealth inequality, is just wealth or celebrations or displays of wealth have always worked to sort of keep people in line, essentially. Right. So just give them something to distract them, give them something to sort of keep their eyes glued and this and that. Essentially, do you remember the Aaron Bushnell self-immolation thing happened where he self-immolated in front of the Israeli embassy in Washington, D.C.?
Yes.
Because he was opposing what is happening in the Israel-Palestine conflict. And somebody tweeted out saying that, you know, between Sydney Sweeney's SNL performance and Dune 2, everyone's just forgotten about that man, Aaron Bushnell.
Yeah.
And I was just, it just made me realize that all public spectacle serves as a vehicle to sort of distract people or to sort of nudge people's attention to sort of more frivolous matters, and which I also just, like, you know, sort of solidify these rich people as a cultural behemoth in people's mind, like, oh, this is what you should be aspiring to, or you should try to recreate this in some sort of, like, you know, some smaller platform in your life when you're celebrating something, because that's all you can aspire to. You'll never have our kind of wealth, which is why Neeta Ambani was wearing that 500 crore necklace with a giant, emerald or whatever. So it's just like, you know, they're like, they work like subtle mind control onto you to reinforce what should be done, what norms should be followed, how to fall in line. So yeah, I guess that's the purpose it serves. Is it worth commenting? No.
The funniest meme I saw was somebody took a picture of Antilla the day before the pre-wedding bash and the lights were on and they were like, sab log Jamnagar mein hai to ghar ki light ki chal rahi hai. That was quite funny.
A mutual of mine co-tweeted that saying, parasite chal raha hai inke ghar mein.
Then, of course, the one that's been doing around a lot was, I think it's a clip from Suryavansham where Amitabh Bachchan is really rich and then he becomes poor and comes back to the house of his father. And like, inse kyun introduce karan? Ye thodi koi VIP hai. And people are comparing that to Mukesh's brother. I forgot his
Anil
name.
Ambani.
What's his name? Anil Ambani. Yeah. Who was also there, by the way.
Invited. I think I didn't watch this clip. I solely imbibed all of this from the chatter around it, where essentially Anant Ambani met Mark Zuckerberg and Bill Gates, and he was showing off how his watch, which is a Richard Mille, well, I don't know how you pronounce it, whatever, I've only read it in advertisements, was talking about how his Richard Mille watch is about $1 million. And those people are just a little flabbergasted as to why he's showing off that his watch is like $1 million, which is, so somebody also commented about it saying, you know, that you should never show off to rich people, because if you're buying things solely for looking like you're rich, then you're never going to impress rich people because they don't care about sort of thing. Exactly. And someone's like, oh yeah, they're going to squander all their wealth in a few generations if they keep buying these ugly Richard Mills. It's not even a Rolex.
just two last things. So please watch the interview that Rahul Kanwal did with Anant Ambani. It's one of the most surreal things I've ever done, where the khichdi that is prepared for the elephants is being tasted by Rahul Kanwal. It is hilarious. And the last thing is, I think that I felt like the reason why we are so obsessed with this is that when people like us, like urban living, English speaking people, when we do our barats and our, you know, shadi ka hall wala shadis, you'll always find there are people on the street also looking at our barats and our functions and be
idiots,
like, ke andar kya ho raha hai, right?
Right.
I think for the Ambani wedding, we are that. We are the people outside the gate trying to peer in, ke andar kya ho raha hai, humko bhi
dekhna. I'll be very honest. I find the entire mill, like the hullabaloo around weddings, really embarrassing. Like, if that were me getting married, I would not be able to handle it. So, you know, sorry to my mom, but I feel like the best way to get married is bhaakke. Like, elopement is the way to go. I would not be inviting Rihanna to my wedding, even if I had money to invite her to my wedding.
Oh, so, man. You know, What a waste of wealth you will be, Nainika. But anyway.
Really sad. Let me come into a few billion dollars, then we'll decide.
Yeah, then you probably won't be on this podcast, but let's not go
No,
there.
I would still do it if I made a few billion dollars. I can assure you that much.
Okay, Nainika. We'll see about that. But yeah, that's our take on the Ambani wedding, the grand Ambani wedding.
Yes. Do write to us about what you thought were the most hilarious moments. And if you have any cutting, incisive social commentary surrounding the wedding, please let us know about that as well. Also, I feel like this whole wedding thing is a little diverse, right? Like only weddings in North India are like this time consuming and laborious. Like, I don't think weddings in the South are like a day affair.
I used to have that misconception. So, of course, there are differences. Like the South Indian weddings aren't maybe as opulent and show-offy, but they are also quite wealth-driven.
I mean, marriage has been a transference of wealth and power, essentially, between families.
I learned this when I went to some Malayali weddings in Bangalore and a couple of Tamilian weddings. Bas unka wahi hai ki wo 6 baje subah shaadi karte hain.
So, cool. Yeah, it's cool to get it done with. Then you have the rest of the day to chill.
Yeah. Okay, before we move on, I have an announcement, which is about the News Minute and News Laundry Election Fund. Ahead of the upcoming general elections, News Laundry has tied up with the News Minute yet again to bring you important stories straight from the ground. This time, instead of one big fund project, we are doing smaller projects so that you can choose which one you would like to power. We will have more than 15 reporters, producers, and editors from the NL and TNM on the ground, covering various states, including Manisha, Atul, Dhanya, and Sudipto Mondal. And your contribution will directly power their work. Head to newslaundry.com/2024-election fund to make the contribution. That's newslaundry.com/2024-election fund. And you can make the contribution. For those of you who are on iOS, we have the election fund contribution option on the app too. But if you can contribute via our website on your phone or desktop browser, that way we will save the Apple commission. So that's about the election fund. So let's move on to Mr. and Mrs. Smith, which is the new Amazon Prime original, which comes with a lot of hype. This is a spy series created by Francesca Sloan and Donald Glover. It's loosely inspired by the Brad Pitt, Angelina Jolie spy thriller of the same name. So Nainika, you saw this. Tell me what you thought about it and what's your opinion?
So this came out a couple of weeks ago and I've been dying to talk about it ever since. I think Priyali and I had a conversation that I want to come and record and talk about this. So it was conceptualized by Donald Glover. Essentially, it was supposed to have Donald Glover and Phoebe Waller-Bridge. Of the Fleabag. She was co-writing it and she was supposed to act opposite Donald Glover. But now it's Maya Erskine. I don't know what else she's been in, but she was quite good in this. And essentially, it's a little different from the original Mr. and Mrs. Smith, where they were sort of pitted from rival agencies. There were spies for rival agencies. They were also married, but they were married and that was a separate plot point that became, you know, the point of contention for their respective agencies. This one here is a little flipped on its head that these two are spies. They sign up to work for the same agency and then the agency sort of pairs them up as a husband-wife couple and essentially tells them that you will be husband and wife, like play pretenders husband and wife for your missions because you attract less attention as a couple. People are more charitable to you if you're a couple together instead of just, you know, people raise questions about one single person. If it's just like a married couple, people don't, you know, they're not as suspicious about it. So they essentially get paired up. They get this beautiful house in New York and they have like this AI system, this computer system that keeps telling them about the projects that they're supposed to take on. And it's, I think, an 8-episode series or so. And the story of everything, how it's developed, it's very slick looking, it's very beautifully done. But just the chemistry in both the leads is quite beautiful. It's quite nice to watch. Apart from just being a spy thriller, it also ends up being like a really beautiful exploration of what it means to be a couple, what it means to be married, what it means to... So they're sort of in a strange position where they're married, but they're also just like, it's a new relationship for them. So they're having all these relationship fights.
Anand and Radhika should watch this.
They maybe should watch this. But I don't know. They've been dating since forever, I guess. So, you know, I don't know if that applies, but maybe they should. But essentially, it's just like they're having all these fights that a couple has, like, oh, you're so terrible. Oh, you become cold. Oh, you call your mom too much. Oh, I'm not going to share my, I don't know, Apple location with you anymore because I'm mad at you. And they're having all these fights while also on mission where they're like toting guns, killing people on a chase and this and that and funky, weird locations. So I thought that it made for a very funny contrast. And it's just also a great exploration. I think it's very funny, sharp, incisive writing about relationships, which is quite rare because people do make a lot of romance movies, but I guess to really understand the machinations of what happens in a couple between two people who are in a relationship together is very difficult to capture in writing format. It's like, you know, sometimes it's like you're making a single child write about a sibling relationship. It's very different. If you're not in it, you've not experienced it. So I feel like that way, just the relationship writing aspect of it is very good. And I think it's because it's Donald Glover. He has always been known for somewhat good writing. I know people like take a lot of stock with like a lot of fault with him for reasons here and there. But I do think he makes for an interesting writer. I think his characters do make for an interesting watch on the screen. So I genuinely definitely really recommend. It's also just like both the leads have great chemistry amongst each other, so it's fun to watch. And I mean, who doesn't want to watch like I love spy shit, and I love like action on the screen, especially if it is slick and good looking. So it's all of that.
It's almost like it was made just for you, Nainika.
I actually do feel like the show, when I was watching it, I was like, this is so perfect. It literally is made for me.
They didn't bring up that we'd be paired until the last interview.
It's an old KGB tactic. You draw less attention as a couple.
Very romantic.
What is it that you two do?
We're software and engineers. Administer single dose, no casualties.
What? You think if the company hadn't matched you, you'd be compatible?
If you like the original Mr. and Mrs. Smith, which I did. And the show has been nice about preserving certain motifs from it, like that fight they have while they're shooting at each other in their house.
Has
been preserved. So I think like they've been honest to the source material while also making something genuinely fun to watch.
Okay, Donald Glover also made Atlanta,
I think,
which is a very acclaimed show. I haven't seen it, but I've heard a lot of good things about it. The reason I wasn't very excited about this is for this reason, is that the Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt film just never worked for me.
Work for you?
I don't, like, I get it that it was very big at the time it came out because they were seeing each other, Angelina and...
No, they started seeing each other during the filming. Brad Pitt was married to Jennifer Aniston and he sort of started cheating on her when they were making the movie together because they just had great chemistry.
I don't know. It just didn't excite me, this idea of two hot people who are married to each other but then are also spies.
This one flipped the script a little. So I think when they announced the casting for like a couple of years ago, they were like, oh, the Mr. and Mrs. Smith remake is on the way. It stars Donald Glover and Phoebe Waller-Bridge. I think one of my mutuals on Twitter was just going ham about the fact that these two people are not hot. Ugly people should not be in a remake.
Come on. What?
Mr. and Mrs. Smith. I was like, it's okay. You think ugly people can't be in love or what? But
Phoebe Waller-Bridge is not ugly. Neither is Donald Glover.
Angelina Jolie pretty. That is the only difference there. But yeah, essentially, a lot of people were like, oh, but they're not attractive. They shouldn't be in a remake. I'm like, that's crazy. Ugly people, whoever you think is ugly, can also find love. So let's be a little less shallow.
Your mutuals have really high standards, I have to say, if they think Donald Glover is ugly.
Yeah, I don't know. So I think both of them looked quite nice on screen in the show.
Cool. I'll check out Mr. and Mrs. Smith, which is on my watch list among all the many, many things.
You need to watch it just because it's one of those good Amazon Prime shows. I think I was at home the other day with my mom and we were surfing, trying to find something to watch. And I just realized all shows are like really bad these days.
That's true. I tried watching Citadel and it was really bad. I'm sure Mr. and Mrs. Smith will be better than that. Before we move on, I'd like to read a subscriber letter. This comes from Pranay Nikam. And Pranay says, hello, team ANA. Hope all are sane given the content you binge.
Thank you, Pranay.
Pranay has a question for me. He says, a question to Abbas. When is the ANA and Hazard Ageville crossover happening? Well, Pranay, we just mentioned, Nainika was very much in Bombay, but she refused to to message me or tell me that she was in town. Had I known, I would have definitely fixed something in studio. But that's okay, Nainika. You were on a short trip.
Yeah, the next time I'm in Bombay, then I guess.
Actually, when I started my podcast, I was on an episode of ANA just before I started the podcast. We did an episode with Abhinandan and Suresh Menon. And when we went off air, I had actually asked Abhinandan if he'd be interested in being on the show, and he agreed. So right now we're doing in-studio episodes. Once we start doing online episodes, I'd love to have Abhinandan or Rajshri on any of the episodes. So yeah. So let's move on to a movie next, which is Lapata Ladies, which is a film that I was able to catch in the theaters. It's directed by Kiran Rao, whose last film came out about 13 years ago. She made Dhobi Ghat. This film, like the previous film, is also produced by Aamir Khan, but it has almost a completely new star cast. I've seen very few people in the film in other TV shows and movies. So Lapata Ladies follows the stories of two newlywed brides who get lost on the same train. I saw the trailer and I thought it was the premise was very funny. It's set in a town in northern India where, or is it Madhya Pradesh? I'm not sure. So basically what happens is, this was very much in the trailer also, so I'm not spoiling something. A newlywed couple is traveling on a train, and as happens in most parts of northern India, that the woman has covered her head with a ghoonghat. Mm-hmm. And in the hurry to get down on a station, the husband takes the wrong, and
because it's
shadi season, the
it's all just newlyweds in the train.
It's all full of ghoonghat clad women. So he actually takes this a woman who's not his wife and happens to go to his own village, and everybody there is shocked and surprised as to what happened. And importantly, this film is set in 2001, because I think a lot of the lost and found aspect of the film would be irrelevant in today's times, where you can trace people with
a
with
phone
the internet
or a,
and with social.
Yeah.
Yes.
Chacha, pranam. Aapki bahu. Ghoonghat upar utha lo, beta. Sab ghar wale hi hai. Ye kaun hai re?
So I liked the film. I thought it was refreshing to see again a story which is set in the villages of India with a very fresh outlook and with a very fresh cast. Just to give you some reference to this, so I went to see the film in the theaters, and the trailers that they played before Lapata Ladies were Yodha, Bade Miyan Chote Miyan, and one more, some action-driven film. And I swear to God, I couldn't tell one apart from the other. It was all just massive explosions and people beating each other up.
Right.
So when Lapata Ladies started, I was very happy and a little satisfied that, okay, something different is happening. It's a funny movie. It has like a very slice of life feel to it. Since it's directed by Kiran Rao, and Kiran Rao has done a lot of her outlook to the world is very much a feminist outlook. So what happens is that the wife, the bride that the protagonist of our story takes by mistake, she's actually an educated woman who wants to study more and who's very progressive.
Right.
So the family in the village is very taken aback. Mm-hmm. Very interestingly, so since they've exchanged the brides, they have to go to the police station and write a report about it. And the film kind of highlights how the villagers are very scared to go to the police station, because they do this through this thing ke hamare gaon mein ek kahawat hai, and then the kahawat roughly translates to going to the police station is worse than the theft you have faced, because you know you will face more discrimination in the police thana. So the police constable is played by Ravi Kishan, who is very good in this film, who's having a bit of a resurgence because he was also in Netflix's show called Mamla Legal Hai.
Right.
He's very good in that.
That you
as
also
well.
Liked, you said.
That I also liked, yes. So that show is about lawyers and it's a new story every episode. But Lapata Ladies, it comes with a lot of acclaim. It was screened, I think, at Sundance or one of these other foreign film festivals. And it came with a lot of acclaim and a lot of sort of accolades attached to it. So I didn't like it to that level. I think it's a very finely made film, and I would recommend it that if you are someone who likes to see offbeat films and offbeat stories, please do go watch it. I would just like to mention the three main cast members. Sparsh Srivastav plays the bereaved husband. The first lead is an actress called Pratibha Ranta, or Ranta, however you pronounce it, and the other woman who's supposed to be his wife is played by Netanshi Goel. So very quickly, the two tracks run parallelly. One is that this husband has taken a wrong wife to the village and the villagers are horrified. Then parallelly, you also follow the actual bride who has actually landed up on another wrong station.
Mm-hmm.
And there she gets taken care of by this sort of this woman who has a thela on the station, and okay. she fries pakoras. And she's like the sort of matriarchal feminist figure,
mm-hmm.
who has gotten rid of her own family because her father used to abuse her.
Right.
And she says things like, "Ke dekho choda choda dekho to aurton ko mardon ki jyada zarurat na hai. Hamare saath fraud hue ja raha hai." Because basically she tries to say that marriage is a trap to sort of make the patriarchal structure going on. So that was very refreshing to see that the person saying these things isn't like a teacher or like an elite woman saying these things
to her. It's not that she's educated. She's just seen enough life and understood this.
Seen enough light. And she creates a little family unit with her and the beggars on the platform and all of that. So that was quite sweet. So I think subtly, this film makes a lot of points through its visual language. It's a good movie. I just don't think it's as great, or I didn't love it as much as some people seem to have.
I think the hype for it has been there. Like, people have been really commending about how wonderful it is. And I do like to see like a woman-centric film come up, especially one that captures the life of like the middle India, I guess. I do love seeing cinema about women and their interior lives. And the film, which one was the one that was based on Ship of Theseus? I think it was called Ship of Theseus only.
Ship of Theseus, yes.
Yeah, that one was really blasted to hell and back for being like pretentious cinema or whatever. But I do believe in Kiran Rao's worldview and her movie making prowess. So I do feel like this will be an interesting watch. I just unfortunately couldn't go to the theater. I was not well. Whenever I can catch it, I think I will.
Yeah, I think part of the idea that, or part of the reason why I think maybe I wasn't as impressed by it as some others, might also have to do with the fact that I'm watching it as a man, because there's literally instances in the movie where a female character asks another female character, "Ki hum auraton ko itni azadi kyun nahi di jati?" And I thought that was a little too on the nose, but a friend of mine who I watched it with, who was a female friend of mine, she said no, she liked it because it was literally addressing those things head on, rather than keeping it somewhere in the background so that it can't be said. It is a very fiercely, staunchly feminist film, and it is funny also. It's not serious. It's funny and it's feel good. So unlike Dhobi Ghat, which was a very sad film, so Lapata Ladies is a recommendation from me. But maybe if you've heard so much acclaim, just keep your expectations a little, but it'll be a fun watch.
But
definitely watch it. Let's read another subscriber letter. This comes from K. It just says K. And K asks, "Why have you spent 3 episodes reviewing the same bad movie, Animal, episode 331, 332, and 340?
I love the brevity, K. And I think the reason we've been talking about it so much is because Animal was sort of, it wasn't just a movie, let's be honest, it was the biggest release of 2023. For India, at least. It was unfortunately culturally rather powerful. So I just felt like it made sense to sort of talk about it, to have everyone's opinion, the rotating cast of everyone who features on the show should at least, you know, get in a word edgewise about what they thought of the show.
Essentially, what Lapata Ladies does for women, Animal did for men.
Absolutely. Staunchly meninist film.
Did we? I don't think we spoke about
we
it.
We haven't
right?
spoken about it. I did have the wonderful privilege.
Do you want to piss off K even more and do
Let's not. I don't want to give that man any more screen time than he deserves. So let's not. We have better things to talk about.
Can I just say, so on my podcast, we had Anurag Manas Verma come on. And his physical look is resembling a lot with the director of Animal. So when I put up the posters and like people screenshots were like, oh, Sandeep from it, yeah, people were like, wow, guys, you got Sandeep Reddy Vanga. And I was like, no, sorry to disappoint you. It's just, unfortunately, it's one of the other leading podcasters of India. But that's that. So K Animal is closed unless when they come up with Animal House, which is apparently going to be the sequel to
Yeah, absolutely. Animal. I'm going to go watch the sequel and laugh as much as I did in the first movie. So, well.
When that comes around, we'll actually, not just people who come on ANA, just the whole News Laundry team should give their
everyone. We should have like one of those street style interviews, but we're interviewing everyone in the NL office.
Yes, all of them, men and women.
Men and women, very important. Men, women, important. And the non-binary friends of ours.
Everyone, yes.
Everyone gets in a word edgewise.
A film that Nanika was able to watch, The Holdovers, which has quite a lot of Oscar buzz. I think Paul Giamatti is nominated for Best Actor. One of the supporting actor nominations are also in the movie. And the film has got really good reviews. I was not able to catch it, unfortunately. But Nanika, what is The Holdovers and what did you think of it?
Oh my God. I think the year's only just started, but it definitely will feature like right up there in my list of the most beautiful movies I have watched in this year. And it's directed by Alexander Payne. It stars Paul Giamatti. And the film is about the unlikely bond between a cranky history teacher and his troublemaking student when the school essentially shuts down for Christmas break and one student is left behind and Paul Giamatti is forced to stay back as his caretaker. And oh my God, what a movie. Oh my God. So I just, as somebody who is familiar with the environment of a boarding school, I was quite curious to watch and see where it goes. And the movie is so beautifully made. It happens in some boarding school in somewhere in Massachusetts, I guess, because the closest city was Boston in the movie. So I'm presuming that's where it was. And Paul Giamatti has been there for like really, really long. He was a student at the school and now he's a teacher here. The boy in question is played by Dominic Sessa. Who, it's his first film actually. He was just like, he randomly showed up to the auditions one day and they liked him so much they casted him in this really important role in the movie. And he's just, you know, he's slightly like a troubled child in the sense he's bounced around from one school to the another. And a lot of his story is not revealed in the beginning. It's just that he keeps being bounced around from school and he has a warning from his parents, his stepdad and his mom essentially, that if you mess up here and you get thrown out of here, we're going to send you to the military academy, the nearest military academy. Your schooling is done for essentially. So he gets left behind at Christmas, him and a few other boys. And he essentially gets left behind because his mom is like, okay, Christmas break is... just recently gotten married to my new husband and Christmas break is the first time I have to actually finish my honeymoon, which I couldn't otherwise. So I'm going to go with him. And can you please stay back at school? And he's obviously devastated, him and some other boys, but all those other boys take off on like a skiing trip of their own. And only Dominic Sessa and the teacher, Paul Giamatti, are left behind along with one caretaker at the school. And it's just insane. Because these two are sort of in a crazy, like a Stockholm syndrome situation with each other. They just sort of start opening up to each other, telling each other about lives, about, you know, how when you're a teacher and you spend so much time around young kids, you sort of tend to like become a proxy parent. In the sense that you understand that they're, you know, these are children that have like innocent lives, but you also have to be a little matronly towards them. You have to take care of them. So they build this bond sort of thaws out over time. And he's a very cranky guy. He's just like, you know, spurned by life, the teacher. So when he sort of decides to warm up to this boy and be nice to him, it's kind of, you know, out of character for him. And he sort of has his redemption through that. And the boy, for the first time in his life, has somebody believing in him as a teacher, as an adult, because he's usually considered a problem child. So it's very beautiful to have an adult who actually believes in you and doesn't just see you as a problem child.
Sir, I don't understand.
That's glaringly apparent.
I can't fail this class.
Oh, don't sell yourself short, Mr. Coates. I truly believe that you can.
Every year at Barton Academy, students, faculty, and staff depart the campus for a two-week winter break. But there are always an unfortunate few who have nowhere to go for the holidays. They're known as the Holdovers.
Mr. Hunnam.
Hello, Mary.
I heard you got stuck with babysitting duty this year. How'd you manage that?
You know, he used to be a student, right?
Yeah, that's why he knows how to inflict maximum pain on us.
So I thought the movie was brilliantly made. The dialogue was wonderful. I feel like, you know, because again, I keep saying this, when I do truly watch something good, I realize how bad the bad things are, because it really pales in comparison that you have such beautiful characterization, genuinely good dialogue, beautiful settings. I think it's shot on like a film camera. I don't know. It has that soft focus essentially to it, because the movie is taking some time. I think it's 1970s because they show the moon landing in it.
Ah, okay.
So it's some time like 1970s, early 1970s. And oh my God, what a beautifully done movie. The school is quite beautiful, whatever, you know, access of, to the buildings that they have shown in the movie itself. And the characterization, the costumes, the conversations, the references they make, all of it is beautiful. If it's still playing in theaters near you and you have time, please, please go and watch it. I specifically set aside a weekend just to be like, okay, one of these days I have to go watch The Holdovers because I was so excited for it.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's still playing near you, please go watch it. Otherwise, if it's not playing near you, please catch it on your streaming, wherever you can. It's not a movie to be missed. Just, it's worth the Oscar hype it is generating. And yeah, I mean, I feel like movies this beautiful, this emotionally honest, this wonderful are like really rare. They're once in a, I don't know, once in a few years. So please, please, please go watch it is all I'm going to say.
All right. The actress who's nominated for a supporting actress category is Davin Joy Randolph.
Yes.
And the film is directed by Alexander Payne, who's also done two other films that I really liked. One is called Sideways, which is also which also stars Paul Giamatti, and The Descendants, which stars George Clooney.
Yes.
And it's set in Hawaii. I think those two films are also really beautiful.
So you can clearly tell that it's a good director doing this job, and it's worthy of you know, your attention.
I love grumpy professors turning into like
slightly
soft
nicer
people.
Men. Yeah, you know, having their redemption. I do miss having grumpy teachers, but unfortunately, even though I tried to give them grace, as much grace as a stupid 14-year-old can, unfortunately, you've never had the redemption cycle with any of them. But I did have good relationships with my teachers, and I do sort of understand that, you know, when you're in an environment clearly away from your parents, your teachers sort of turn into these proxy parent figures, which is a huge responsibility to have on, because children tend to idealize. Children also tend to not have a view of what it means to be kind in relationships or non-punishing in relationships. So they either tend to put you on a pedestal, and when you sort of fall off that pedestal, they become cruel and disenchanted by you. So it's a very emotionally very difficult position to take, and I feel like very few people can actually take on the emotional load of being teachers. And I guess this movie is also a little bit honest to that. So
so
I guess if it does that good of a job, you should 100% go and watch it. And yeah,
I will. Yes. So yeah, both, I think everything we mentioned today has been a recommendation from
apart
us,
apart from the Anant Ambani wedding. We can't recommend that.
Hey, I'm recommending it. Go watch Rahul Kanwal's interview with Anant Ambani, and go watch Rihanna's videos on her social media. Did you see Karan Johar has put up like a properly produced pre-wedding video, high production quality on his Instagram. So
damn,
go watch that as well.
Okay.
Hamari Shadi ke video post-production video is like some Chandu video wala. Their pre-wedding post-production
no,
is Karan Johar.
No, Abbas, your Bombay royalty. You should have one of your director friends come in with their film camera and shoot the wedding.
Hey man, I'm not getting married anytime soon. Okay, I'm in the prime of my youth. All right, please.
Sorry. Okay, whenever you do get married, I hope you get one of your film camera friends to come and make an avant-garde black and white film, which celebrates the union.
I'll get Alexander Payne to do
action. Yeah, he'll make a dark comedy about, you know, my marriage and all of the weird funny bits surrounding it. That should be fun.
All of my life.
Actually, if you could, quick question to the listeners. If you could have one movie director direct your post-wedding, your wedding film or whatever, which one would it be?
That's a very simple answer, right? Suraj Barjatia, who made Hum Aapke Hain.
That is not the same answer. That's your default answer. I would get David Cronenberg to make like a very weird body horror movie surrounding my wedding. Because why not? Might as well go all in. So yeah. So Abbas, your answer is...
I don't know what
your answer is Suraj Barjatia. I am getting David Cronenberg to make my wedding film.
Okay, from Bollywood, it'll be Suraj Barjatia. If I had to do like a Hollywood director, let's go for the big lie. I'll get Quentin Tarantino to direct my wedding.
You'll get Quentin Tarantino to direct your wedding. Yes. I am so... Quentin Tarantino, don't you remember Kill Bill?
You know what?
Kill Bill had a wedding scene.
The Juta Chori sequence will be epic. Okay.
Oh my God. You would have not just say that. Yeah, Quentin Tarantino would be really focused on the Juta Chirai scene because he has a thing about
foot
feet.
Fetish.
Yeah, he has a foot fetish. So, wow, that is very interesting. That is very incisive insight you had. Yeah, so
You know what will be hilarious is next week when Abhinandan and Rajasri are doing the show and they're like, why are people sending us wedding directors? Directors, would they like to direct their wedding?
Yeah, I think would you get Anurag Kashyap to direct your wedding video? He's lost his charm of late, but I feel like he could do it.
A little bit, not really. The divorce maybe.
Fair. Okay, so I'll get David Cronenberg to direct mine. You'll get either Suraj Barjatya or Quentin Tarantino. If you're listening to this, please write to us and tell us about who you'd get.
Yes.
Which director would you get to direct your wedding video?
Wedding video, yes.
Yeah, very important.
But yeah, that brings us to the end of this week's episode. Before we wrap up, I'd just like to plug my own podcast, which is called Has It Aged Well? Do check it out on YouTube. If you type in Has It Aged Well, it'll show up on YouTube. Or if you're listening to us on audio, check out IVM Pop on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever else you get your podcasts, and you'll be able to find the Has It Aged Well episodes there. Or you can also find the link for my podcast in the show notes of this very episode. So that will make things easier for you. Follow me on social media. I'm at AbbasMomin on Twitter and AbbasMomin88 on Instagram. Nenika's mutuals will be on my timeline because I retweet them very often. Okay, then. All right, then. Thanks, Ms. Rathore.
Thank you, Mr. Momin.
And that's a wrap.
Thank you for your subscription. You're changing the world by changing the way news is funded. For the smoothest News Laundry experience, download the News Laundry app. It is the best way to listen to our paywall podcasts. And you'll also get access to all free News Laundry shows. Keep us ad-free and subscriber-funded. Help us grow. Tell people who listen to you to pay to keep news free. Subscribe to News Laundry. Keep journalism independent.